All right, Matthew, welcome to episode 85 of the Performance Advantage podcast with myself, Dr. Will O'Connor, and yourself, Matt Miller, aka MTB PhD, founder and creator of Breakace, the world's first brake power meter and analytical software for measuring braking on mountain bikes, successfully funded on Kickstarter. Matt and I are both PhD sports scientists, and we've worked over the last decade with a plethora of athletes ranging from enduro to track cycling to ultra marathon running. Matt and I love to break down sports science into digestible, hopefully entertaining, bite-sized chunks that you can listen to on your daily commute or while you're doing the dishes.
So this whole free podcast is made possible by the sports science courses that Will and I offer on performanceadvantagepodcast.com, where we have a power meter course for running, a power meter course for mountain biking, and a sports science course. And they're all worth continuing education units for USA Triathlon. So check those out.
All right, Matt. Today we have Marianne Moller, who is going to talk to us about female athlete health.
So Marianne is doing, she's doing her master's research on menstrual health in elite athletes. So it's a super cool study. And Marianne's a really good athlete herself. So she races elite mountain bike, and she was on the podium at elite cyclocross nationals here in New Zealand. So she's awesome. She walks the talk, and she has a lot of really good insights from the athlete's perspective and then also the scientist's perspective. So this is a really good episode. You're not going to want to miss it. Your areas like female health. So what does that mean? And like basically what you're going to have to do is you're going to have to, by the end of this, make it easy for me to be able to talk about this stuff as well, right? So you're going to have to like break down these barriers that Will and I have, which you can see them. We can't really see them. So break them down. And by the time we finish this, we're gonna come out as new guys and new coaches with more.
Yeah, cool. Okay, well, I suppose it'd probably be good to start just with briefly what I'm doing in terms of my research. So I'm basically looking at, I'm doing my own research project, which I've called Riding with Flow, which is about menstrual health in World Cup mountain bikers. So basically, it's quite recognized in the literature to date that female athletes are at a higher risk of menstrual disturbances. And this is on like, you know, there's quite severe at one end and then some more subtle type of disturbances at the other end. So probably the most severe type of menstrual disturbance would be amenorrhea, and that's basically no menstrual cycle. So someone who has no period. And the most severe form would be primary amenorrhea. And this is, so a female that's 15 years or older who has not had a period before. And then second to this would be an athlete who has already gone through menarche, which is having your first period. So she's had a healthy period and then she's lost a period. And that's usually for longer than 3 months. And so it could be having a menstrual cycle just less than three times a year. That would still be considered as amenorrhea. And then you also get oligomenorrhea, which is infrequent or irregular menstrual cycles. So this would be about 35 to 90 day long cycles and about three to eight cycles a year. So I'm guessing you probably know what a normal healthy menstrual cycle is.
We got that one. Yeah.
I think we have maybe it's just over, it's almost 50-50 female male listenership, but we do actually have quite a large cohort of younger male listeners. So if you could just break it down for them.
So I mean, a healthy cycle would be you know, like approximately once a month, but it can range sort of like 22 days to 35 days. So if someone's getting a cycle that's outside of that range, then it could be a sign that there are like other issues going on. So in female athletes, this is probably around about, it's quite a big range, and it really depends on the sports that you're looking at. But it can be anywhere from about 45% to 75% in female athletes. And this is probably more like 15% in the general population. So it's definitely a lot higher in athletes.
So that gets up to the number. Like if we're talking 60, 70%, that's a number where it starts to become accepted, right?
Exactly.
Like you know, if I'm thinking about other things that happen in terms of plantar fasciitis, like certain core injuries, like, oh, you're a runner? Well, yeah, of course you're going to get like, you know, shin splints or something. It starts, and we've heard that as well, like, oh, well, you've probably going to get in a regular cycle because you're training hard. And that's like shows that you're training hard.
Exactly.
Well, some coaches say like that's just what happens, right? That's what you're saying. Well, like some coaches are like, yep, well, what do you expect?
Yeah.
That's not good, right? Because you need a regular cycle. And why is that so important? And then why does it happen?
Yeah, like you said, it's been kind of almost like normalized, particularly in elite sport, in that it's a sign that you're actually training really hard and you're really lean. So those are good things. But unfortunately, it's actually not a good thing. So most often there'll be underlying like chronic energy deficiency. And this is in that basically the most sort of basic way I could put it is that your body is shutting down your normal reproductive function, and that it's saying that we don't have the energy right now for growing a baby, producing milk to feed that baby. You know, essentially, well, you say those are like non-essential services right now. we need to focus on, it's not a good time to have a baby. You do not have the energy. And that energy instead is going to go towards just the essential processes like thermoregulation, cellular metabolism, locomotion. So that's when you start to see things like disruption to the normal female hormonal cycle, which will be seen in irregularities in the menstrual cycle, that's generally a sign that, there could be some other underlying issues, but it's often a sign that this athlete's in a state of chronic energy deficiency. And there are long-term health consequences to that. So
I guess if you think about it evolutionarily, right, that's the word, like that's a good thing to happen, right?
Yeah.
Because if you suddenly, like your group of people and you're a cave woman, and we're on the move, we're going to the next cave, and it's going to take us 6 months to get there, and you're carrying a baby, we might have to leave you behind because we're like fighting off saber-toothed tigers.
Exactly.
Right.
And if there's not enough food to go around, you're not getting enough food, you know, and then how are you going to have a baby to then feed as well, you know? It's not a good time to have a baby. And there are going to be, in the short term, though, you know, and this is, again, how it's become somewhat normalized, is that, athletes can still perform really well, even in this state, because they might actually, you know, they could have be really lean, and this actually might give them, like, a bit of an advantage in the short term, because there are some sports where being light would be an advantage. But in the long term, you're going to have problems like, there'll be things like impaired recovery, increase in injury risk, such as stress fractures, problems with your metabolism, but then more serious ones like early onset osteoporosis, weak bones, thyroid function problems. So it is really something that does need to be taken seriously rather than as going to be a problem for your long-term health. And of course, fertility. Sorry, I should mention that. Those things are far more important than any kind of short-term performance goals.
So that's where I can see where it's like type 2 diabetes, where we have insulin and we have this hormonal, I guess, protective process of, shutting down the reproductive cycle in a female when there's an in huge energy deficit. But then when we try and leverage that, or that is a side product of, in the case of diabetes, like overeating sugars, and in this case continuing to train, whereas that would have been a protective mechanism to ensure that a female wasn't going to, you know, reproduce during a nomadic period within, you know, a movement process between seasons or something. Whereas now you have these females, both young and old, continuing to train and continuing to, I guess, request a lot of resources from their body at, like, on an ongoing manner. And so is it, like, do you know if it's mainly all of those, I'm not sure if the side effects are hormonal? Like, is it all a large hormonal disturbance that happens in this situation?
Yeah, it is. So it would be, I suppose the main one would be a drop in estrogen, which is important for bone health. So, and this is described probably terms that have been heard before, like the female athlete triad, and relative energy deficiency in sport. So those basically combine, they are underpinned by low energy availability, but also disordered eating and bone health. And yes, it's all hormonal, really.
So, and with that, we can loop the guys back in too. You know, if a guy's listening to this thinking that this stuff might not be applicable to me, like Reds is really common in male athletes as well.
Yeah.
So keep listening.
Right? Yeah. So we will get to stuff for males as well. But I think the important thing as well for men is that, you know, is just kind of like understanding and being educated on this type of thing as to, like, yeah, what, like, what are they? I suppose, you know, that even though it is kind of normal in female athletes, it's not actually a healthy thing for them long term. And I suppose as well, yeah, if we move into how do they get into such a low energy state, well, obviously they're training hard, so, but then, you know, the energy intake isn't always necessarily matching that expenditure, and that can either be unintentional, you know, they're just actually training hard and they're busy and their sessions are long and the way that their day's scheduled, they don't have time to eat enough, or it's intentional. And there's probably looking at about 30 to 40% of female athletes have disordered eating. And these, again, you've got on one end, you've got like diagnosed bulimia and anorexia. But then there's also other practices that women engage with that are classified as disordered eating. So that would be things like just very restrictive eating, which we found about half of the athletes in my research project engaged in that. And then also things just like regularly vomiting, using things like laxatives and supplements. And also we had 25% of women were training on rest days to get themselves into an energy deficit. So all those types of behaviors will be obviously warning signs to look out for.
What's restricted eating? Like, can you give us a definition of restricted eating? Is that like what Will does? Like, you know, Will hates carbs and he doesn't like touch them ever.
That is a hard one because, you know, I think a lot of athletes probably do restrict their diet in some form. But I suppose it's, and actually, I don't actually know the definition of it, if I'm being honest, but it's possibly as well to do with the intention behind it. Like, are you doing this to achieve what you believe to be an ideal body type for either an appearance reason or a performance reason? Or is it actually you're restricting your diet to be a healthier athlete? Do you know? So, you know, and it's probably quite a fine line in that it can often start off with quite good intentions, but then it can just start to become more and more restrictive. And then as well, we also need to account for, you know, like, I mean, all athletes, but female athletes are under a lot of pressure, not only to perform in their sport, but as well, social media these days is such a huge pressure for athletes to look a certain way and for whatever they believe is the way that they have to look for their specific sport. I should also actually mention that a lot of the findings in menstrual disturbances, it is the findings really just become significant when you separate out the sports into, they can be defined basically as like leanness sports and non-leanness sports. So those are sports where you have a high drive for being lean. And these would include sports like aesthetic sports. So that's like gymnastics, figure skating, where you're actually getting judged partly on your appearance. Endurance sports, so distance running is a really good one. Cross-country mountain biking is another one, where you're carrying your weight. So being lighter is beneficial. And then also weight class sports, such as something like judo, where you need to make a certain weight. So the athletes that are in those types of sports are at much higher risk of both eating disorders and menstrual disturbances, just purely based on the types of sports that they're in and the additional pressure in those sports to have a certain type of body type.
Do they almost go hand in hand? Like an eating disorder or restrictive eating, irregular eating patterns, and then like is the correlation very high?
Yeah, and I think that is recognized. There's a recognized association between those factors, which is why we have the female athlete triad syndrome and relative energy deficiency and sports syndrome, because they explain how those factors are related.
So what's the female athlete triad then?
So the female athlete triad, it's a little bit, I don't know if it would be outdated, but it's almost been kind of replaced by REDS now. But the female athlete triad, it combines disordered eating, osteoporosis, and menstrual disturbances, and it's describing the relationship between those three. So relative energy deficiency in sport is just a slightly different way of looking at it, but they're, and it also applies to men as well, but they're the same, they describe kind of the same relationships, and that they both are underpinned anyway by low energy availability and the way that that impacts on our hormones.
That's why I like the REDS better, because the female athlete triad makes men think, oh, it's not going to happen to me. And then it also highlights the importance that it really starts with energy deficiency. And is it true then to say, like, you could avoid a lot of the issues in the future, like osteoporosis and amenorrhea and other complications, by simply having eating more? Is it really that simple?
Well, I mean, I don't want to oversimplify things, but essentially you don't want to be in a chronic energy deficient state. So yeah, you would assume that simply by eating more, but also I suppose, you know, if people have had problems and they're going to start having, there could be some other issues going on, like they've damaged their metabolism. So it can start to put things out of balance. So I'm not sure what the easiest
solution is. And simply eating more. I mean, man, as an endurance athlete, restrictive eating is just like, I don't know. It's just something about the mentality of your sport, and just knowing, being probably a love of control, and then like a delayed gratification kind of associate. You're like, well, I know I've just finished this big session, but if I don't eat as much, I could probably have chocolate later, or that's a win for me. Like that's a 500 calorie win right there, like, because I did my session over lunch and didn't actually eat lunch.
Yeah,
you've been there. Listen to the way we're like, yeah, for sure, yeah, like everyone on the listening is like, oh yeah, that's a win.
Now, I'm not trying to oversimplify it at all, but I'm just trying to give everyone that's listening a sense of kind of where it all starts. But I've dealt with this stuff. I was like 55 kgs and I was taking laxatives and I didn't know why. And I wasn't eating meat, and I was eating popcorn instead of a meal just to get leaner. I don't know why you're laughing. I think we should edit out, because like it was actually a serious issue.
And, well, I guess like I'm laughing now because I've been there as well. Not laxatives. But and I'm laughing, I guess, at how ridiculous it sounds.
Yeah, it's
coming from someone out. But when you're in it, it doesn't. Yeah. It you're completely, you know, that initial line, like you said, kind of innocent, like, oh, I've got a race coming up. I'll cut chocolate. You know, I'll cut dessert. I'll cut portion size. I'll cut snacking, and then like before you know it, you're eating latex. laxative laced popcorn.
Yeah. And this is why, like, you know, I think it's such a slippery slope.
Yeah.
And especially because we do, like, when we're training, we also do like a lot of things that are where we manipulate the diet, right? With carbohydrate loading, maybe restrictive carbohydrates. And then, you know, sometimes we might want something to recover after a workout, like some protein or something like that. So, okay, next thing you know, you've made three changes to your training and your eating habits that are actually potentially really beneficial. Like, okay, well, if carbohydrate loading's good, then why don't I just not eat tomorrow because I'm resting anyway, right? And then very quickly, you've got a problem, and no one notices, because you know what really is the difference between not eating on a rest day and not eating carbs? Because to my mom, that looks the same, right?
Yeah.
And no one sees me taking laxatives, because they were just like in the back of the cupboard, and I just took them, you know?
I mean, it's not funny. I'm just laughing at you for thought you were taking laxatives.
It's because, you know, I would never do anything like this now, but it was, I was trying to, I don't know.
Yeah. So
it's part of this podcast, right? It's trying to educate on what are the implications, and what are, especially for females.
Yeah.
Like how do I even say I'm coaching an 18-year-old female endurance athlete. And you're like, you're getting incredibly skinny and your sessions quality is dropping. Quantity is drastically increasing. How do we have an effective conversation here? Like, you know, like what?
Well, how do you bring it up? Because can you look at someone and say, yep, definitely energy deficient, right? Because you can't do that. It's not easy like that, is it?
No. So, and that's the thing as well, is that weight isn't always a good indication, because, like I said, once you know, a consequence of having some menstrual disturbances is that your metabolic rate, resting metabolic rate, will drop. So you could have some athletes who their weight isn't decreasing, but they're still in an energy deficient state, which is why something like tracking the menstrual cycle is a really good idea. But this should be something that I mean, say 10 years ago, I don't really know if people tracked their menstrual cycle unless they were maybe really high elite athletes. But, you know, nowadays we've got really great apps that make it really easy to do that. And then you can, you know, because something like saying you've gone from having a healthy menstrual cycle to all of a sudden having it, you know, very irregular, that's already a really good sign. Yeah, there are apps that can track them that I think, well, we found that, like, we had most of our athletes were tracking their cycle, which is really good to see. And that was actually higher than in some previous research. So, I mean, I don't know, but maybe over time things are starting to become more kind of like mainstream in terms of the apps that are coming out. There's like Fitter Woman is a really good one. Specifically for athletes. But then there are lots. I mean, I use like four different apps to track my cycle. And I think
just in case one gets it wrong.
And so, I mean, for say Matt, so for you, you know, you use Training Peaks for your athletes. And so, although do you use it? I don't know if you use it for all your athletes. I assume so. Yeah.
Of course. So, the only way to go.
So, you know, and even so Garmin now as well, they have a menstrual cycle tracking app in there, function in there, sorry. So you can potentially be, well, I suppose the first step would be for you guys as coaches, you know, when you start with athletes, would be to kind of like front foot the conversation in terms of breaking down the stigma a little. So you could say, you know, how I think you guys do a questionnaire or something that you give to your athletes when they sign up. You could even just include something like a question that could be just as simple as for the female athletes, relating to your menstrual cycle, is there anything you think would be important for me to know as your coach? Something like that. You know, just could be something real basic.
But I'm so worried. There's this guy that we did our PhDs with. His name is Joe. And he did his research on, like, how female athletes exercise in the heat during their menstrual cycle.
So he had
to, like, make sure, like, they were at a certain point in their cycle to actually do his research. And he made everyone so uncomfortable because, just the way he asked, because he would ask in front of people.
He didn't care. It became so normalized to him. Like, you know, what phase are you in? How far away? How many days after your period are you? He's just walking down the hall. He's just like, as the, you know, young lady comes in, like, oh, hey, you know, hey, welcome. Like, how are you going? So are you day four? can everyone hear me right now? Like, I don't know. It's
that's how we don't want to be, right? Because, like,
because it can be.
It makes someone uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Well, I think that it, I mean, you don't probably, I mean, you probably don't even have to do it in person, right? So like Matt, so you're my coach. I don't necessarily talk to you direct face to face and say, hey, Matt, I've got my period today. My flow is quite heavy.
I can see it in your Training Peaks notes.
Yeah. So you can put it, but you know, so putting it in your Training Peaks notes is quite, it kind of almost separates it a little. So it maybe doesn't feel as uncomfortable, which I think is quite a good way that things are kind of shifting now, and that it doesn't really have to feel as like personal because I'm just writing it in my calendar and you can see it there. And yeah, so it doesn't feel awkward. But I would also say that I had a PT once on my first session with him, and he said to me, do you find that you're impacted with your training based on where you are with your menstrual cycle? And it actually caught me off guard because I was really like, I've never been asked that before ever in my life by a coach or a trainer or anything. And I go, oh, no, because I wasn't. But I was a little bit caught off guard because it was just so rare. But after that, I really appreciated that from him because I was like, you know, I really appreciate that you're asking me about these things. And I would wonder if it's maybe more uncomfortable for you guys than it is for the athletes themselves being asked about their menstrual cycle. Because I think that, you know, it is important to women and it is about our health and it is specific to us. So I wouldn't be too worried about that. But also,
well, what about I'm worried about asking because I, you know, deal with generally competitive athletes, endurance athletes, and some like ultra endurance athletes that are training a lot. And then, is it okay as a female to say you have an irregular cycle or you're not having a cycle at all?
Like, is Will automatically a bad coach if like one of his athletes doesn't have a cycle?
But like, just that's immediately onboarding someone. Like, I haven't had my cycle for, you know, whatever 6 months, whatever amount of time, and now I'm like, okay, well, I don't really know what to do. And were you happy to tell me that, or are you just lying?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
it's regular.
Yep. So we had in my research, we had a section which asked about that, like the barriers to communication about the cycle. And so, and this was also, there was another study done in New Zealand on over 200 New Zealand elite athletes. This was published this year, that I used a modified version of their survey. So they had the same questions in their one as some of my ones. We asked about barriers to communication, and there were about 65% in my study did talk to their coaches about their menstrual cycle. And then only 25% of people actually felt like there was some sort of barrier to communicating, which was quite good. And of those people, the barriers that they said, there was a question about you're concerned about disclosing this information for how it might impact you in any way, in terms of like how you're treated or your position in the sports or team or anything like that. And that was pretty low, like kind of negligible. The main reasons why people didn't talk to their coach, well, was because they're a man. And then also because of the stigma around the topic. And then as well, they didn't believe that their coach had the knowledge to engage in a conversation with them about it. So if we look at those sort of three areas, so I suppose we can't do anything about, you know, a lot of, unfortunately, you know, there's a bit of a gender imbalance in coaching and so, and just general support staff in sport. So there's female athletes are often dealing with male support staff. So however, if you did have like a wider group, then it could be like, is there a female option that they would feel more comfortable talking to about anything to do with their menstrual cycle and having that as an option for them if they wanted? Otherwise, just breaking down the stigma. So, and that's really just by like initiating conversations, normalizing conversations around it. And even just things like doing this is great. And I do think that there is a bit more of a shift towards it becoming like a bit more normalized in sport. And I even, you know, like if we look at some of the, so I'm just going to use mountain biking since that's my sport that I'm doing. But in, say, the World Cup season this year, we had Jenny Risvids. She pulled out of, she was up the front in one of the World Cup races and all of a sudden she was gone. Didn't know where she was. And then afterwards she was on her Instagram and she posted that she had pulled out of the race because she had a period and she had really bad cramps. And I think just even stuff like that is that you are seeing more, I think, women openly talking about, female athletes talking about their menstrual cycle. And so I think all of these types of things can just really help kind of reduce the stigma around it.
You also see like a lot of female athletes, especially even in mountain biking, talking about their past battles with energy deficiency, right?
Yeah. I think
Evie Richards, the now world champion, she talked about previously having to deal with this.
Yes.
And I think so there are some others as well.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. And I think Evie Richards, she was really open about her struggles with it as well. And just the pressure to be thinner and how then she actually was, you know, getting worse. She was just getting worse and worse and she wasn't responding to training. And then eventually when she just took a break, and then now she really like talks about how when she's happy, you know, she performs her best. And I think that really has to be more of the focus, is being, you know, like happy and healthy athletes are ones that are going to perform better. And particularly in the long term, you know, and it's just sort of more of the focus on long-term health is really a prerequisite to high performance.
Yeah. When I was at uni studying exercise science, there was a girl in my class. She was an incredible runner. Very lean, and like we would do a lot of work like group work together, and she'd never really seem to eat, or she'd like maybe snack on little bits of cereal while we were doing our work. And like to us looking, like we could see like there was something going on, but she was such an incredible runner. She was very good, very, very good. And we would measure her VO2 max in the lab, like, you know, every few weeks, and she'd just blow everyone out of the water. But then it was very like, not quickly, it was maybe a few years later, her performance actually started to really decline. We did a whole, it was before we did podcasts, I did a talk with her and she let me publish it to my students when I taught nutrition. She talked about all this stuff and how actually, because she had to actually take a break because she started to get a lot of shin splints and things like that. But then once she started to have, just basically eat more, rest more, train less, like really optimize what she was doing, that's when her performance got a lot better.
I mean it's sad as well, if you know, like that kind of short-term you know, if there's a focus on, like, in the short term, they're performing well. So, you know, don't worry about the rest. But then, you know, long term, what's going to happen to these women? And, you know, so.
And what, yeah. So what is, like, what is happening where we see whatever aged female, and typically if we're looking, say, highly competitive females entering into the sport, because some of the more mature athletes might have figured out their energy, training, lifestyle, travel balance.
Yeah.
And we're kind of seeing an irregular cycle or no cycle kind of appearing within the plan. But then you kind of like, well, I know this is bad, but how bad? Because performances in training and in racing is maintaining, if not in progressing. So that's like, that just seems like such a trap. But like, what's happening there under the surface?
Yeah, well, I think you would have to see that there is a reason for, there is an underlying reason for, you know, her not having a period. And that's a severe, like, no period is a very severe menstrual disturbance. So it would have to be despite the performance, that, you know, that really has to be restored first.
So that requires intervention then.
Yeah.
Like, that's where there's like, that's no different than a stress fracture, like, where you'd exactly. never recommend someone to continue training on a stress fracture.
Exactly. It's a really good way of thinking about it, which I hadn't thought of. But yeah, it's exactly right, is that it's not stuff that should be overlooked at all. Yeah, because it is really important, just like, as you said, a stress fracture, you wouldn't keep training. But yeah, again, it's difficult because, like you said, like we said at the start, it's just been kind of normalized. But I do think that as well, you know, I think that women themselves are becoming a lot more educated on this as well, and being a bit more aware that, you know, your menstrual health is really important. So I think,
how do you convince someone that, like,
pardon?
Like, if I'm, you know, maybe I have restricted eating, I'm overtraining, I'm training on rest days, and I'm killing it, right? How do you convince someone that the potential for developing osteoporosis sooner or later or whatever is an actually big deal when the performance is so good? Like, yeah, how can you tackle that?
I'm not too sure about that.
It's a whole, like, now that I'm seeing it, like, one, I don't have the knowledge to apply a protocol. Like, I've been in this industry long enough to see so many injuries and overtraining syndromes of differing degrees. You go, okay, yeah. Okay, here's what we're going to do. Okay, this is, you know, we're going to try and hit these numbers. We're trying to do this. We're going to get in the gym. Like, okay, you can't run anymore, but how's your diet? You know, it hasn't been great. Okay, have you been restrictive eating? Like, we can touch on some of those things, like, well, that's going to lead to this injury, and this is how we're going to progress back to full training. When someone goes, oh yeah, I got amenorrhea, I think that's how you say it, you go, oh, okay.
No, it's not.
Amenorrhea.
You have the accent too, which makes it worse.
too many vowels.
Spell it.
I don't know what to do with that information, right? Like, is it, you know, I don't know if that's an immediate stop. I don't know if that's a progressive slowdown.
Do you get that information?
No.
So you don't even get.
Oh, well, some.
Sometimes you get that information.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Well, I don't know about a coach. I don't know what coach necessarily can do, because it's kind of it's almost like a bigger concept, you know, like it requires like a kind of culture change as well around the attitudes and educating everyone. To kind of remove the stigma to talk about it, and also like, you know, try to shift that attitude away from that being normal to it actually, you know, being something that's unhealthy. So I'm not sure. I think it's more about education. Necessarily, I'm not really going to recommend that you as a coach would enter into any kind of intervention. I don't know that that's...
No, but that, yeah, that's what I mean. Like, I don't... Yeah. Like, if we can continue to educate on the risks, like, well, like identifying flags or even communicating the issues, then we can start to implement these kind of standard operating procedures, you know, where you're like, okay, well, look, we've probably just like any other injury or setback within your training, like, well, we've obviously mistimed something here. You know, I don't know what it is, but let's work forward so that for your goal, we are progressing towards your goal. At the moment, we don't have the communication process isn't happening, right, across all female male coaches, coach athlete relationships, or maybe even female. I don't know, can't comment, but. Then even with that information, it's like, what are you even meant to do with it? And at what point do you start to make change or recommend, make recommendations?
Yeah, I'm not sure. That's a huge,
That's almost like that's the next step. Like, because at the moment where we're at is no one really talks about it. Or at least from your research that some people talk about it. And I would guess like that's at the highest level where everyone realizes it.
Yeah.
That talking about these issues is really important for performance.
Yeah.
I would assume that further, like you get closer to amateur or beginner, it just doesn't get talked about at all.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, and that would be the other interesting thing to look at as well is like, okay, well, you know, compared to the people that are right at the top that have a huge support system around them. And then is that different to those who are kind of lower level athletes who don't have as much support, like team doctors and stuff like that. But I suppose there's as well, like rather than just these kinds of, there's those types of menstrual disturbances, then you've also got just simply understanding, I suppose, how the menstrual cycle impacts female athletes. Like women that have healthy menstrual cycles. So
talk us through that because I know for me as your coach, you don't seem to be affected by it at all. And you actually put that in Training Peaks and we end up like, we don't actually have to talk about it because
you
just don't seem affected. But you told me this, that other women are highly affected by it, right?
Yeah.
So what's happening there?
Well, you know, what's funny is that I actually don't know that I probably don't actually give you enough information about my cycle. So, which is because I'm probably a bit like, not bothered. It's just, I've got to, you know, keep your track on all my stuff and I'm all good. I've got it under control. And as well, that's another thing as well, is that some women might just be tracking it all themselves and, you know, that's their own private information. They might not actually want to discuss it or feel that they need to, but, I suppose, for example, like, you know, yesterday I went for a run and I'm like, okay, well, I'm on day two of my period and I don't actually like running when I have my period. Because like I'm not like majorly affected, but I do feel like I usually have like a little bit of lower back pain. Like I feel a bit bloated. I get a little bit of like not major stomach cramps, but you know, it's not that comfortable running. And so I have said, like, I'm not really massively affected by my cycle, but, you know, about, I think it's like 70 to 90% of women do get like negative side effects just from their normal cycle. And this can also be a woman on hormonal contraceptives. That's another thing.
Ask about that. Yeah.
Yeah. So, the main kind of negative symptoms that women will experience would be like painful cramps, like lower abdominal cramps, lower back pain, like pain in your thighs, you know, nausea, headaches, low mood, low motivation, disrupted sleep. So all of these things can impact, you know, how you're going to feel around your training. But there are also going to be more extreme women, like women who get like heavy menstrual bleeding. And those women might find that they have things that they can't even like finish a training session without having to like change a tampon, you know, or they're going to be worried that they're going to like flood through their protection during their training session. And there was actually a study done last year that was on elite female rugby players in the UK, and their uniform is white shorts, and they found it really stressful that they're worried about when, you know, it's an additional stress, like worrying about when they're going to get their period or when they do have their period and their training. And so, I mean, an outcome from that study was that then they decided to actually we're going to not wear light colored shorts where possible. So, so I think it's like as well being, you know, like if there are certain women that are going to have really bad symptoms and they might prefer to rest on those days, if you're already going to be scheduling like a rest day or something, or changing the training slightly to something that might be preferable, then you can like work around that, you know? So hormonal contraceptives as well, that's an important thing to mention, because about half of athletes are taking hormonal contraceptives, and that's higher than like the general population, which would be about 30%. Main reasons, there are like pros and cons to this. The one of the downsides of it is that it can have a bit of a like a masking effect, and that you can't exactly tell what's going on with her natural cycle because she's taking endogenous hormones. So one reason why some women will be taking these contraceptives as well is to restore their menstrual cycle. So if they've previously had an irregular cycle or no cycle, then they might be prescribed like the oral contraceptive pill, and that will restore their cycle. But I mean, although this does give them like estrogen, it's not actually fixing the underlying low energy deficit. So, you know, they're still going to have the same problems, but it just won't be as obvious. So with that being said, often, you know, menstrual disturbances are probably underreported to what they actually are, given that half the athlete population is taking contraceptives. What also is interesting is that about 70-80% of athletes are taking contraceptives. The first reason would be for contraception, like not having babies, good option. And then also would be to manipulate their cycle, specifically for training and competition. So this would be, you know, just running pills together, for example, so that you skip your periods, because some women, it's sort of a bit varying in the research, but it's kind of anywhere from like half to about a third of women perceive that their performance is going to be decreased when they have their period.
But that's so, not the case, right, in the research?
Yeah, so it's an interesting one. So because in the first 2 to 3 days of a woman's period, and including the few days beforehand, that's when you're most likely to experience the worst menstrual cycle symptoms. So if you are one of those women, which there are a lot of women that experience bad symptoms, such as like heavy bleeding or period pains, anything like that, then obviously those things are probably going to have a bit of an impact on your performance. However, that's generally just the first few days. In the first half of your cycle, that is actually what you could call like the low hormone phase. And this is possibly where you could actually be performing at your best. So it's interesting because you could, you know, I mean, I know even just up until like a couple of years ago, I always thought it was such a bad thing to have my period on race day. And I'd be like, I remember it, like Cyclocross Nationals a couple of years ago, and I like had my period and I was like, oh, damn, I'm not going to do my best. Like I've got my period. But And then I actually, and then now I've like learned actually that's not necessarily the case. And in fact, I have consistently like performed my best at the, you know, when I have had my period. So maybe, and again, this is kind of about education. Like people just assumed, I think, a lot, like, you know, 10 years ago or something, that like, you know, when you had your period, you weren't going to perform your best. But actually we know now that like that's not necessarily the case, and certainly not for all women. But the belief is still there. We only found there was, I think, 12% of women believed that they could perform better when they had their period. But equally, we had like a third of women were unsure, didn't know. But it was also only a third of women believed that it was a bad thing to have your period in terms of performance. So, you know, that's quite interesting as well, because that's less than what's been previously seen in previous years in the research. So maybe there is, you know, because there is more like information out there on that now. So hormonal contraceptives also, yeah. So that's super common in athletes as well. And because they do have that belief, they've previously had that belief that having their period on race day would be a bad thing. That's why women have been using contraceptive to try to skip periods. But I mean, we don't even know, it's unknown even what the long-term consequences are of doing that. So it would be better if women can actually, work with their cycle rather than trying to work against it, and rather than having to feel like, oh, I have to try to skip my period, rather than just being like, okay, well, how can I best manage my period? And actually a really easy way to do that is the first step would be I can track it. That's really easy to do on an app on my phone. So at least I can predict, when it's likely to come. And then I can plan accordingly to that, whether that is, I know from the past, also because I've been logging my symptoms, I actually might feel really tired on these first 2 days. So why don't I, shift it around so I'm not doing like my really high intensity days then. And then also, planning for things, say if it is going to fall on race day, then it's just like, just at least you're like aware of that. So I think those are kind of the first steps of just like being able to better manage your period, and also maybe just learning a bit more so that to know that it might not necessarily be a bad thing.
So work with it instead of against it.
Yeah.
Where can people get this information? Like, is there a hub? Is there anything like we're all New Zealand based, but I mean, there's national high performance bodies all around the world. Is there anyone doing a good job at educating their athletes, or just even the wider sporting community? Just like, hey, we have these things on overtraining and diet and reds, like energy deficiency. And then, but what about if I'm, a coach and I'm looking, or an athlete, young athlete, and she's going, I heard this, I better go check that out. Is there anything?
Is there like ridingwithflow.com or something? Can we go there to get all these resources in one place?
There will be. I know in New Zealand, so for High Performance Sport New Zealand, there is what's called the Whisper Group, which is Women in High Performance Sport.
Oh, I worked with Holly.
Holly Thorpe. Yeah. So they are a group that is specifically focused on female specific health. They sound fantastic for athletes in New Zealand. I'm obviously not sure about what's available overseas. But I think as well, like there are a lot more kind of like female specific kind of like podcasts out there, which are more focused on like athletes and there are people as well like Dr. Stacey Sims who run courses on this type of thing. So I think there is more information reaching kind of mainstream now, which is becoming more available, which is really cool. But Yeah, but I'm sure there's still quite a lot of work to be done in terms of making stuff available for people and education available for people like coaches and other staff involved with female athletes.
Yeah. So if you had some, like, I guess, recommendations or things to look at for both, like your young up and coming females, I'm going to give you a few groups here, then your more mature female athlete, and then your male coach or support staff. What can you say to each of those? Having done the research, having been involved in this like field as part of your master's, and having talked to the people being out in the community, like what can we do?
Yeah, well, I think for young athletes, it would definitely be it's kind of the both female athletes. I'm not quite sure how old you mean in terms of more mature athletes. Is that, are you talking like postmenopausal or?
No, I didn't even think about
okay.
That.
Okay, I think that for all female athletes, it would be, you know, to track your cycle and ideally your symptoms as well. And that paying attention to your menstrual health is important, and that irregularities in your cycle and a loss of your period is not a good thing and something that you'll want to pay attention to. Also, it would be, I think just the focus that has to be on being healthy first. I mean, that's really for all athletes, and that your best performances will come when you're healthy. And it is, you know, for your younger athletes as well, they need to think about longevity in the sport. Although I suppose for the younger athletes, it would also be that because, you know, things like having really bad menstrual cycle symptoms or things like that, it could possibly put them off certain types of sport altogether. You know, think about sports where, you know, you're having to wear, you know, leotards or like, you know, really tight clothing or something where you possibly feel uncomfortable when you've got your period or anything like that. But I just hope that, you know, through things like, I mean, even just like this type of podcast and things like that, is that we can just help to just make conversations about it a bit more normal and a bit more common, so that girls don't feel like they need to be embarrassed when they have their period, or that it's like that they can't talk about, or that they can't ask for help about, or that they can't even just say, you know, I suppose as well, you wouldn't want coaches to interpret things incorrectly. So if I'm, you know, missing training and it's actually because of my menstrual cycle, it's not because I'm lazy or lacking motivation, you know, so things around that. And I suppose for male coaches would just be to, you know, continue to read information that's out there and, you know, don't be afraid to like ask or just to bring it up. You don't have to be really invasive in what you ask about, but just putting it out there that, hey, if you would like to track your cycle so that I can also see it, you know, that'd be a great idea. Here's how you can do it. Is that just another aspect of your health and performance that we can monitor? And if there's anything specific that you feel like you'd like to tell me in relation to your menstrual cycle, or if you'd like me to find someone else that you feel more comfortable talking to about that, then let me know. But also, you know, that's completely up to her if she wants to do that or not. So I think that would be the key sort of messages that I would hope people would, take away from this.
Cool.
Yeah, I think that's really helpful, all of that stuff and everything you've spoken about today. And yeah, we appreciate you coming on, and I feel a lot more comfortable now, Matt.
Yeah, you guys aren't laughing at me anymore. And yeah, I think it's good. And this will be a good resource for everyone that we can point out other coaches and our female athletes too as well.
Yeah, I think I'll actually start giving you more information on my menstrual cycle, Matt.
Yeah, this will be good. I'll learn
because,
more.
Because, you know, I was like, I keep a bit to myself. But I'm like, actually, for your benefit, maybe it'll be useful if I actually just give you more detail.
Yeah. Yeah, let's do it. put it on there. Yeah, I think it'll be good. And then we can talk about how that helped to break down barriers and the positive outcomes from that.
But I mean, do many of your other female athletes track their cycle? I mean, for you, where you can see it, or
not where I can see it. I've spoke to some, but like it'll come up maybe in a conversation, like, oh yeah, that session was a bit crap because, you know, I was, you know, in this phase, or I was coming up to my period, which is always a bit of a crappy time for me. And then if it's not tracked, I'll go, oh yeah, okay, so that's, you know, whatever, like 28 days or 30 days from now, and I need and then you forget. Like, because I'm not.
Yeah.
And so yeah, definitely, it's like some people just feel fully comfortable just mentioning some symptoms and things. But then it's no different than, like, in terms of reporting symptoms or tracking their cycle. Some people like barely keep training peaks up to date. So, like,
yeah, right.
You know, some people don't write comments in training peaks, it's just an auto sync from their Garmin.
People like this do exist.
Yes. Yeah. Like, they don't even check if it's green or not. They just read what it is. But
yeah.
Yeah. So it's not like, it's not going to work for everyone. Everyone's going to feel like, you don't want people to feel obliged to do it if they're not into it either. But, it's more, I feel like, one, it's just so poorly talked about and educated. Like, in any coaching course, certification, accreditation thing you do, not even mentioned,
or it's, you know, like one slide.
You're like, oh yeah, females have a thing, so make sure you have stuff, thanks, okay, next. And then, you know, like, that's but and what when I was working with the junior, the youth triathlon, like, there was nothing, right? Like, like nothing for me to get more educated, nothing for the senior group to educate further down. That's where we're at, is going to be the education process. And so where can people reach out to you, follow you, check out some of your research or anything you've been up to?
Yes, probably just on my Instagram. Is where you can find me. And my survey is still open as well, if anyone else wants to take that. But my research project will be finished hopefully end of this year, although it's taking a bit longer than expected. So hopefully I can, like, put out some more from my research next year, which is exciting. I think it's cool. You know, like, the whole point of doing it all is to hope that your findings can kind of actually, like, make it out there to people to have some kind of positive impact, you know. So so even, like, just doing this and discussing things is, you know, really cool. Yeah, so thank you.
Cool,
sweet. We'll link to your survey and your gram down below.
Cool,
somewhere. All right, thanks.
Okay, thank you.